This is the Pure Green Podcast, episode 20. This week, we're talking with Adina Grigori, author of Skin Cleanse and creator of the well-loved skincare products SW Basics. Ever wondered how to get that perfect natural glow you've always wanted? We're talking about just that on the show today, and I'm sorry to say, there's no magic pill. It's a whole body thing, a lifestyle even. So as you can imagine, it takes work, but the results are better than any miracle cream you've ever tried. In a wonderful follow-up to last week's interview with Tara Miller, we're going to purge your beauty routine, drink up some green juice, and get you glowing. I'm Celine McKay, and you're listening to the Pure Green Podcast. This week, we have a listener to thank for having Adina on as a guest. She suggested her via Twitter, and before I jump into this week's interview, I just wanted to take a moment to say that we truly welcome suggestions for guests on the show. We want to hear from you, so reach out via Twitter. Our username is @PureGreenMeg, and let us know who you'd like to hear on the show. So Adina had quite a journey to get to where she is now. She grew up with terrible skin conditions that just worsened as she got older, and eventually the cream and prescriptions she was using was just making things worse. She writes about her experiences somewhat humorously, but her level of desperation was getting pretty intense. Finally, realizing that her situation was dire and the things she was using to fix her skin just weren't working, she turned to improving her diet and rejected all traditional skincare solutions. Instead, she went to her kitchen cupboards and began experimenting, and before long, she found the plain olive or coconut oil and other natural products were all she needed, if she used anything on her skin at all. Fast forward, and she's created a skincare line that's loved and sold across the country, and she advertises in big letters right on the package that there are only 3 ingredients. She's managed to simplify skincare like never before. She helps us realize that most of what sells us on regular beauty products is just marketing, sometimes even worsening the condition it's meant to cure to create dependency. And you don't have to worry about complicated, scientific-sounding ingredients, which, as we learned in Tara's interview in episode 19, are downright scary and don't belong anywhere near our skin. Adina loves to educate, however, so she also wrote Skin Cleanse, recently released, to share with the world how to get great skin naturally. It turns out, and it's no surprise, that you get beautiful, younger-looking skin by working from the inside out, no matter what you might have heard. There's a lot of learning going on in this episode, so get ready for that. You'll learn how to use a food and beauty product journal to keep track of what you're doing to your body and easily pinpoint some bad skin-destroying habits. You'll learn what foods to avoid. Yeah, I'm sure you can guess what they are. And what foods to embrace. You'll be reminded to drink water. And then you'll learn how to strip back your skincare to pretty well nothing, to literally cleanse your skin in a way you've probably never considered. You really have to read Adina's book to get the whole story, but this episode is a pretty good start. Let's go to the interview. Here's Adina.
So just before we jump in, I wanted to have you give us a little bit of insight into your background, so your backstory, how you got to the place that you are now.
Of course. So it's kind of a long history, just in the sense that I've been really going through it, I'll say, my whole life. I call myself just a really sensitive person in every sense of the word. So my whole life I've been dealing with, you know, sort of nagging ailments with my health. Nothing crazy. I've been very lucky. It hasn't been bad, but it's just been things that I can't kind of get to the bottom of. So older, you know, and have been to a lot of doctors. So as I got older, when I was in college, I started sort of got fed up and started trying to figure out how to heal myself on my own, landed in nutrition school and holistic nutrition school, like many people with nagging ailments do. And sort of started trying to figure out, okay, how can I heal myself? What's going on? How do I get to the bottom of this? Worked as a personal trainer as well, just tried to really learn about the body and myself, and fixed most all things that were going on, and realized food is really the key to feeling better, and also the key to, like, the way that we feel really bad has so much to do with how we're eating. And then from there, the way that I really landed where I am now is the one thing I was not able to fix by studying nutrition and fitness was my skin. I just couldn't get to the bottom of what was going on, why I was constantly dealing with breakouts and rashes and irritation and just itchy skin. Like, just my whole life I've had skin symptoms. And food, changing my food didn't really help that much, and changing my skincare didn't really help that much, which was an insanely frustrating experience. And that's how I got to where I am now, which is, my current company and the book, which is about living more simply to have better skin.
So when I was reading the book, well, first of all, I mean, food is such a, it's a common theme. It comes up in almost every interview, and it really is at the root of everything. But before I dive into that a little bit, I wanted to sort of talk about the experiences that you had with your skin specifically. You talked about in your book, somewhat entertainingly, about having to do crazy things like wash your hair upside down because
right.
you're you know, like all these crazy things. And so I wondered if we could just dig into sometimes how the cure is often worse than the illness and sort of why that can be.
Wait, in what sense do you mean that the cure is worse than the illness? Oh, you mean like medicines and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh my
gosh.
Yes,
so,
of course. Yeah. This was the crazy part to me is you go to the doctor, you go to a dermatologist, and they're like, oh, easy, take this prescription. And you're like, okay, wow, that sounds, I mean, even then, I think most of us actually go and, well, whatever the case, if it doesn't feel too good to be true, it is too good to be true. And no one, I think, really focuses on the side effects and the symptoms. And that's exactly what was happening to me. So the upside down shower you refer to, I was using one kind of medicated shampoo for an itchy scalp. And then I was using a different kind of actually steroid cream for a rash that I had on the lower half of my body. But they would make each other, the symptoms way worse on the other part. Like, so I had to basically shower upside down because if the shampoo touched my legs, I would be aggravated for weeks. And it was just, it's just crazy because you're doing, not to mention that then I found out, oh, the steroid cream that you're putting on your legs every day. I went to a second dermatologist who was like, no, 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 you're never supposed to do that. And no one had told me that. So, yeah, I think there is no pill or cream that deals with the root causes of what's going on. There are things that help you deal with symptoms. And if they magically cure symptoms, that's also going to be a problem because they're just going to cause all the other problems because they're so intense, right? I mean, think about what it takes. What has to be in something that you can put on and magically makes you better overnight? That's crazy.
It is crazy. And, you know, we often think about, like, our skin specifically, about treating it topically, like that's going to fix everything. And so one of the things that I had hoped we could talk about was sort of breaking down the facts about what we know, you know, what we're told about our skin, you know, most likely like sales pitches and,
yeah.
and things designed to freak us out so that we're afraid of what will happen if we stop buying and using commercial skincare.
Right.
So I had hoped you could sort of break that down for us a little bit and talk about what actually skin is made of. How does it work? And there's some cool stuff you reference in the book that I wondered if you know, your skin superpowers,
right,
for example.
Right. Totally.
Yeah.
So this was actually even eye-opening for me as I was doing research because, you know, I think we've just all been inundated with so much marketing that we don't even realize how little we do know about our skin. So I think for most of us, what happens is we actually think that our skin is something to be fought with our entire life. Do you know what I mean? Like, you are fighting with what your skin will do to you if you don't take care of it. So whether that means like breakouts throughout your whole life, whether that means aging, right? Aging is like this huge, terrifying thing that we are just trying to do everything to prevent even when we haven't even seen a wrinkle in the mirror yet. Your pores, I think this is a big thing, right? Like, your pores are ugly. You should try to hide them. You should try to minimize them. And I think also the fact that your skin can't protect itself, can't defend itself. So I think that comes in the form of number one, our obsession with sunscreen that I don't think is unfounded, but I think we've taken it a little bit too far. And then secondly, our obsession with products, our obsession with the idea that if you do not cleanse your skin intensely, if you do not moisturize it intensely, if you do not treat it, it cannot do anything. It can't do any of those things on its own, and it will just fall apart if you, it will, I think in a way, betray you if you don't rely on these products. These products are what kind of keep your skin in check. And that's just not true. So as I was doing research, I realized, wow, it's really crazy and obviously is very intuitive, makes a lot of sense as you start to think about it, that your skin is actually kind of its own ecosystem. It is really, really healthy on its own. It does take care of itself on its own. We have to think of this as we haven't had products for all of time as a species. And so to treat it like we were disasters or we can't survive without them is a little bit silly, because our skin is just like our body, or the inside of our body. It's going to take care of itself without you doing anything. So not only do you have healthy bacteria on your skin, just like you do in your intestines, that take care of your skin. They kill bad bacteria. The healthy bacteria keep you bright and glowy and moisturized. But on top of that, we produce sebum. So we actually, our skin moisturizes itself. It cleans itself. It actually detoxes its own, your pores detox themselves. And not to mention, above all else, I think the anti-aging craze is silly, because it's like a really good way of looking at the whole problem, because you cannot anti-age, you cannot prevent aging. And the only way to age more or less gracefully is to treat your entire body better or worse, right? If you treat your body better, if you eat better, if you think about your life super holistically, your skin stays better for longer. It's not, there's no cream that's going to do that for you. It's sort of, we're thinking of the creams and the products in the same way as we do about pills and prescription drugs. And it just doesn't work that way.
No, and it's actually, I'm reminded as you talk about a story that I read a few years back now, actually, about how there's a particular type of dandruff shampoo that actually made the symptoms worse, while sort of convincing you that it was working just to increase your dependency on it. And it's sort of, to me, that's sort of how the whole industry works, is you're kind of, you sort of trick yourself into seeing these minute improvements, or it's just the plain hope of it that just keeps you dependent on it. Or just the fact that, you know, you, by stripping your skin away of all these healthy things, like you're talking about the sebum and the antibacterial properties, the thing to help it regulate itself, you actually create dependency, which is what your book is all about.
Oh my gosh, totally. I mean, think about also chapstick is a big chapstick lip balms are a really big one for me that's similar to the shampoo you're talking about, where so many of them are made with petroleum derivatives, which is insanely drying. So you put it on, you feel better for a minute, and then suddenly you're like, why are my lips really chapped? Oh, I know what'll solve that, more of that product. And that's the case for so many things. Lotions, a lot of lotions have water as their first ingredient. Water will evaporate off of your skin and leave you more dry than you were before. And so then you're addicted to the lotion. And whether or not this is on purpose, I think is something, it's really important to me. It was really important to me with the book to make sure to not be someone who's sort of, I don't know, like yelling fire, right? Like, I don't want people to feel like they have to go to their cabinets and not trust anything and throw it all in the trash and start over and be really scared, because I think then you're never really like committed to change if it comes from a bad place. So who knows if this stuff is intentional or unintentional, but no matter the case, it is definitely factually true. It is definitely true that you are putting stuff on your skin that is aggravating your symptoms, and then you feel like you need more of the product. And that's before even referring to the effect that you're mentioning, which is like the placebo effect, right? You want it to work so bad that you feel like it does, but it's actually hurting you. It's so crazy, right? It's like blows my mind. Even as I'm talking about it, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so insane.
I know, me too. And I'm glad you mentioned that about change. You know, it's not effective if it comes from a fear-based place. That's exactly the philosophy that Pure Green has. So I'm glad that we're sort of aligned on that point. But
like you said, the truth is, it is scary. You know, so skin is like sort of like how they say the eyes are a window into the soul. Skin is a window into the health of your body. And I think that it's a funny disconnect that we have as a society, that we sort of treat our skin as though it's separate from our body as a whole. And really, you set the book up by talking about how it truly is integrated. So part of that is being, you know, you truly are born with it. There are qualities that about your skin that and your body that you just have to recognize and to accept. I thought that was a really good way of setting up the book. So did you want to just dig into that a little bit?
Oh, totally. Yeah. So I talk about this idea of your ideal everyday health. And I think something that was really hard when I started working on the book was I actually think a lot of wellness makes people sort of accidentally feel really bad about themselves because you're always striving for perfection, right? You're always striving to be something you aren't. You're always striving to be just in a completely different place. And so I think what that results in is a lot of people sort of feel, oh, I just wish I wasn't this way, or I wish I could fully control everything and become a completely different person. And I think that's just not the way that I look at it, not the way that I think wellness should be coming at people. Like, I think what's really important is making people kind of more embrace who they are and then work to be the best version of themselves. So your ideal everyday self is who you really feel, like what would make you feel really good about yourself, not walking around wishing you were a celebrity or even the perfect nutritionist that you follow on Instagram, which I follow like 5,000 of them. So I think a big part of the book is, yes, like you are not going to change your ethnicity. You are not going to change where you're from. You are not going to change anything that you've done in the past. So wherever your path has led you, whatever you've gone through, you're not going to undo any of that. The key is taking a really, really honest look at your current life and what you're currently going through and going, do I feel good or do I not feel good? And if I don't feel good, then the next step is taking a really close look at your habits and what you're doing that isn't making you feel good. And I think, so I have this whole section in there about, I think a lot of us treat wellness also like it's unfair. Oh, it's unfair that we have to work really hard to feel good. But I think that that's part of sort of growing up, that you can't, that sure, when you're a kid, you're doing whatever, and you're not thinking about it, but then you grow up and you really know what's going on. So part of it is looking at your life and going, if I'm honest with myself, I'm not eating as well as I would like, or if I'm honest with myself, I'm really addicted to my products and I don't love my skin. And fixing that and not so much sitting around and being upset that it's not fair that your skin is what it is, or that blaming your genetics and blaming where you're from and blaming your parents and all that stuff doesn't help any of us.
No, it certainly doesn't. And I mean, it's very true. That part of the book stuck with me about talking about how, you know, you have to grow up and accept these things and that it can be very hard. Why does wellness have to be so hard? But what's funny about that is that I feel like it's just the beginning. It's not always hard. It's like you said, it's that part about being honest with yourself. That part is hard because you realize that you've been sort of lying to yourself for a long time.
Right.
or in denial. But then then the second part is changing your habits. And once you do those two things, things get a lot easier because you reap the benefits. So it's sort of a self-fulfilling cycle, which is great.
Oh my gosh,
that's good news.
Totally. And to mention that in skin, it's even that effect. Exactly. So when you eat a good meal, I always try to tell people that I work with this, but you know, no one believes it till they do it, right? You eat one thing that's healthy and you feel better instantly. It is like, right, the second that you finish a meal that's good for you, I think not just mentally, but actually physically, you're like, wow, I can feel the difference in that. With your skin, what's crazy is you cannot even argue that it's placebo. Oh, I just mentally feel better. I don't think I physically feel better, because your skin is a canvas. Like, it shows you exactly what you're doing to it. So I think that that's like a huge part of it too, is if you can take that first step you will look in the mirror and you will actually see the physical results of what you've done. And what could be better than that? You know, it tells you.
Yeah, truthfully, absolutely. I mean, it's like when you wake up in the morning and you haven't slept very well, you know, your skin literally looks pale.
Right.
It looks puffy. I mean, it's just instant. You have a nap or you sleep better the next day and you look better, or you drink water.
Exactly. Totally.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, achieving better skin is a tricky thing. So it's more, we've established that it's way more than just putting something topically onto your skin. And basically, you have to start from the inside and work your way out. So with that in mind, how do you normally start your clients off on the right path? So when you're talking about diet, what are some of the main points that you touch on?
So the first thing that we always, always start with, which I'm sure you know about and some of your audience may know about as well, is a food journal, right? So a very simple jotting down what you're eating. And so my personal version of it is a little bit, it's like a food journal on crack, let's say. So it's a little more information than just, you're not just trying to track what you're eating every day, which is typically used as a weight loss or a tool for finding allergies. But what we're doing in our food journal is looking specifically for symptoms. So internal symptoms, right? I had a stomach ache. I didn't feel well. I had a headache, but also added to that mood symptoms. So I actually felt really like I was in a terrible mood at this time today, or had really, really low energy, but I, you know, like trying to sort of link where that came from. And then the last layer is skin. So what we're doing is either two journals, one in which you're keeping track of your products. I talk about this in the book, that you can keep track of your products and link symptoms there. But for me, I really like keeping it all in one place. So it's sort of additional, like added to your food, you're putting in what products you're using, and you're paying really, really close attention to your skin. So notice that I was really oily right before bed, woke up super dry, felt like my skin was cracking, felt really dirty all day, felt really tight skinned all day, really itchy all day. Like these symptoms, you're mapping them out on paper so that you can really start looking at, and this is another thing that I think is almost immediate. I mean, sometimes people only journal for one day and they can immediately start making dietary links to their symptoms, whether or not it's their skin symptoms, because skin sometimes, like you're saying, comes a little bit later. First, we're trying to just look at what in your diet is working for you or is not working for you, or is it, you know, is it your sleep? Is it your stress? Is it something happening at work? Is it something you're not even noticing? Because I think a lot of people, when you're looking at your life without having it down on paper, it's a little bit harder to make connections. And I think it's a little bit easier to maybe like slightly ignore what's really happening. So it's kind of easy for us to go, you know, I'll start working with someone and I'll be like, how much sugar do you eat? And they'll be like, no, not really. I mean, I don't really have a sweet tooth. This is the universal response, right? I don't really have a sweet tooth. I'm not that bad. Yeah. And then you go to write it down and you're like, and you know, oh my gosh, I snack on M&Ms all day, every day or something like that. Right. It's a way to become a little bit more honest.
Yeah. So step one is to shake yourself up a lot by doing this journal, the food journal, which I think that's really fantastic because I'm already picturing myself doing it. And I remember doing it for like maybe I think a week when I was pregnant. My midwife had me do that just to make, you know, take a look at that. But I remember being so hyper conscious because I was pregnant and I was, you know, I was making such a big deal out of what I was eating that my diet was looking really good then. You know, fast forward a year and a half and I'm tired. I have a screaming 2-year-old. She's sick right now and didn't sleep very well. Yeah. I'm renovating my house and I'm, you know, stressed and working hard and things are a mess. And
right.
I know that I'm falling back onto some really bad habits. So I can just imagine how illuminating that is going to be. And I'm going to do it. So you do this. And basically the keys are that you're looking for sort of some red flags, so things that you eat more than you thought, and then some of the symptoms that you know, you noticing when you feel tired or when you feel a certain way and trying to link up a certain food to that sensation.
Exactly.
So I wondered if, I mean, I know, I just want to sort of preface this by saying that I know that there are, everyone is different and there aren't certain foods that cause a reaction in absolutely everybody, but I know that there are sort of more common things that cause inflammation or troubles with your body and your skin. So can you sort of share what a few of those might
be? Yes, of course. My least favorite thing to talk about because it makes everyone so upset. But I do have a bad foods list in the book, and I think it's important to think about only because, yes, foods are very, very personal, and it's very much the case that one person's, you know, something that works for one person might be completely horrible for another. But there's so much in especially the modern food system that is just not helping anyone. And, you know, I think that this is pretty common knowledge. We're moving towards I think it's getting better, but we are a little bit stuck in a world of processed food and things that just aren't working for us, and especially our skin. So the first on the list is milk and cream. And I think that that's for two reasons. Number one, most of the clients that I've worked with who have skin problems end up linking it to dairy. It is very, very common for that to happen. And most of the clients I work with who deal with absolutely no skin problems and just have beautiful glowing skin and are working with me about something else do not consume any dairy. I don't think that dairy, and in fact, there's no evidence that dairy in and of itself is evil. I think it's just the dairy that we consume these days. It is not the typical, like, full fat, beautiful, straight from the farm, delivered to your door in a glass jar milk. It's something kind of different. Well, very, very different, and really affects your hormones, which really affects your skin. So the second on the list is soy milk, and this is actually for a lot of exactly the same reasons. It's just super highly processed, and soy in general is sort of sneaking into so much of our diets that, you know, I sort of actually purposely put it right after dairy because I think a lot of people go, oh, I'm fine, I don't need any dairy, why do I still have bad skin? And it's because they're letting other versions of processed foods sort of sneak into their diets instead. So soy has actually very similar effects on your body and skin as dairy, where it affects your hormones tremendously if you have too much of it. And then you're going to deal with exactly the same problems. The next is food that's fried and coming from, I call it like the Chinese food you eat, quote unquote, once in a while. So this is just, I think it's kind of food that you eat out, but food that particularly you're eating out that's not, that you just, you know, you're not from like a farm to table restaurant, right? But rather quick, cheap, low quality food that you're ordering out. And this is partly because same as the soy issue, you're letting a lot of ingredients like that sort of come into your diet. But also more than anything, it's because you can't tell how the food was made. And I think this is a huge, huge problem right now for people, that intense, super complicated food with a ton of ingredients in it that aren't beautiful, like high quality ingredients, is affecting our bodies in a very real way. Not to mention that everything that you order out is deep fried. And then one of the last ones is sort of the idea of packaged food. So I think right now we're so busy, we're so stressed, and actually there's a lot of really, really amazing packaged food on the market. I think we're kind of in this era of like innovation where you can get organic crackers and, you know, super healthy bars and cereals. But the truth is that it is still a processed food. So organic or not, sugar-free or not, it is that cereal in your box is not a living whole food that you're putting into your body. It's a processed food. And it's one of these things that, again, just like the sugar or the soy kind of sneaks in, and you think you eat, oh, I have a bar when I'm busy, but actually accidentally you're eating like 3 bars a day, or you're eating a bar and a packaged muffin and then a bowl of cereal. And that means that you've not been eating anything that gives your body nutrients. You've just kind of been eating to stay alive, to have energy, right? I think that's what we're doing, but it depletes you and it depletes your skin.
Okay, and then, of course, sugar, too.
Yes, right. And sugar is in all of these things, right? So it kind of goes through, it's, of course, a packaged food automatically, but it's especially worse when it's, like, in your soy milk or in your cream or, you know what I mean? It's just everywhere, which is where I think, like, we have a lot of work to do on the sugar front.
Yeah, because it sneaks in so many places.
Yeah.
You just don't really notice or think about how those small, tiny portions all day just really add up.
Totally.
Yeah. So it's interesting that you talked about in the book that a lot of cases, sometimes like really healthy foods, if you're eating too much of it, it can also cause issues. And so I think this is large, you know, where the problem can lie for a lot of people is that you have your staples and then there's just not enough diversity. You're just eating that one thing too much, like flaxseed and blueberries, I think you gave as an example.
Right. Or the kale lady that I mentioned.
Oh.
Right. Like everyone's heard of the kale lady now, the woman who's like, I mean, there are stories like this in the press all the time, of course, but oh, I ate kale every day in my smoothie for 20 years and now I'm really sick. Like, yes, you can have too much of anything, and actually a lot of vegetables have a very, very small amount of toxins in them that your body cannot handle. Nightshades are a really great example. Probably a lot of people know about nightshades, right? If you overeat nightshades, it's very, it's like the same kind of plant structure as nicotine. So if you eat, so actually a lot of inflammation issues, I think can be linked to having so much potatoes in our diet, right? Everyone's eating like fries with ketchup, and those are two nightshades plus sugar plus it's fried. Oh my gosh, such a layer of things, even though I love my fries, so I'm not knocking them. But right, you eat too many. Starting tomorrow you were like, I'm gonna eat nightshades every single day, you would experience inflammation. Does that mean that potatoes and tomatoes and eggplant and peppers are not good for you? No, they're tremendously good for you, but we have to eat variety. And anything that you wake up tomorrow and you're like, I'm going to have this every single day, is going to hurt you.
Yes, it goes back to that old adage, you know, everything in moderation.
Exactly, totally.
Yeah. So you touched on this really briefly, but so what is the main issue with eating these foods, like in terms of how it relates to your skin or your body? So you hinted at inflammation, but what does that exactly mean? What's happening in that case?
Yeah, great question. So inflammation, I think, is the number one culprit. And that's what that means is you're creating the same effect as when you, I say in the book, like if you bump your leg and you get red and swollen, just a momentary, right? You are inflamed just for a second and then it goes away, your body heals. But what food has the ability to do inside your body is create chronic inflammation. So that means you are slightly inflamed all the time. But that redness, that pain that you're looking at, is the same also inside your body. So if you're experiencing inflammation internally, it's wreaking havoc on your system, even if it's very slight. And it's what leads to all sorts of other health issues down the line. So this comes from consuming virtually any food that is not sort of more wholesome for your body is making you slightly inflamed. Not to mention for your skin, I think the reason I focus so much on inflammation is I think that that's really where you're seeing skin problems. So if you're prone to being like red and itchy and kind of swollen, that's from internal inflammation. That's something that the food that you're eating is like really, really showing in your skin. And then hormones, which I touched on too, right? Which is if you do not have the correct balance of testosterone and estrogen in your body, your skin will freak out. You will have breakouts. And the way that this is really clear for almost all women is around your period. Most of us, our skin kind of freaks out around our period, and that's because you have a very slight hormonal shift and nothing is the way it normally is. So that's another big one. And then glycation or ages, which people have maybe kind of heard about, but this was a big one for me that I didn't really think about so much. And this is sort of the idea of free radicals, the idea that when you put something inside your body that is not wholesome, it's when it's wholesome, meaning when it's not a complete and whole ingredient, but rather something that's been processed, then you're not getting the right balance of nutrients. And same thing, your body treats this almost as an invader that it needs to attack. And when your body is in an attack mode rather than in a peaceful mode, it's going to show symptomatically on your skin and in the rest of your health. It's a little scary.
Okay. Yeah, a lot scary. So glycation, you said it's caused by sugar, not like, right? Is not metabolizing sugar properly. So that's
exactly.
Sort of a big
sugar
link.
Sugar and then your actually sugar, meat and fried foods are what I found to be like the worst, especially really, really on sort of like, let's say factory farmed meat, because everyone is kind of thinking about this now, like really, really bad for your for how your body is processing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one was new to me too, and it sort of really stuck with me because I thought, oh my goodness, so this actual generation of free radicals, and then it seems to be one that should be easily remedied just by cutting out these main core bad things.
Yes, totally, right? I mean,
yeah.
But I think that it's, this also kind of goes back to the moderation conversation because, you know, a grass-fed burger is awesome. It feels really good. Like, I actually was vegan for a long time, and now I'm not, and I feel much better when I eat a little bit of red meat. But if you had a burger every single day, right, it would not be good for you. It's just never going to be good for you. So it's kind of the same conversation through and through. Even with sugar, as evil as we now understand sugar to be, I don't think, you know, it's actually the fastest way to get energy, and that's why it's in our diet so much. And so I don't think it's the kind of thing where people should feel like, oh my God, starting tomorrow, I'm sugar-free for the rest of my life. I don't think that's the way to think about any food, but rather, why are you eating sugar more than you're eating anything else? That's a better place to start. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So one question that I had, and I don't necessarily want to spend too much time on this, but just so that there's a bit more information on this. So I think that a lot of women have a bit of a paranoia that their hormones are out of whack. It seems to be like a, you know, a way of explaining some of these, you know, mood swings or whatever. And so how do you know if your hormones are out of whack? Is there, you know, how can you find that out? And then can you rebalance that just by changing your diet?
So, right, hormones are, it's such a sensitive topic and a sensitive balance in general. You definitely can affect your hormones with your diet, for sure. I think more than anything, what's happening is we actually have, our hormones are not balanced because of how many foods we eat that have actual straight up like chemicals and things in them that throw us out of whack. So, the dairy I was talking about, the meat, right? Like these animals have actually been fed hormones to make them bigger and meatier and more productive. And then you're putting that into your body. Not to mention that now there's evidence that like these kinds of like not, you know, medicines and treatments are filtering into our water supply that we're then drinking. Now's when it starts to get a little bit scary. So I'll stop there. But just the idea that you are consuming things that are throwing you actually. So sorry, I'm being a little bit worried, but what I mean is your hormones naturally are balanced. If we were living, you know, in some beautiful world where nothing was coming at us that was polluted or filled with all these like synthetic chemicals, we would be fine. But we're actually dealing with a very polluted and, you know, like chemical-filled environment. So I think that that's really important because I think what a lot of women do is they go, oh, well, hormones are out of balance. There's nothing I can do about it. But actually, every time you consume something, a fruit, a vegetable, a whole grain, something that's like really healthy and wholesome, you are helping your hormones shift back into the right place. So it's definitely not the kind of thing that you should like throw your hands up and think is impossible. And the best way by far is to consume healthy fats. So I think another thing that's happened is the period of time in which we backlashed against fat and hated it and thought, you know, no one should ever be eating any fat has led us to, I think, even more severe hormonal symptoms. But if you are eating super, super healthy, wholesome fats, a lot of them, like more than you would probably think, you're going to work to keep your hormone levels really healthy.
Okay. I'm glad that you said that your hormones are naturally balanced, because I think that gives everyone the peace of mind knowing that you can, you know, if you can reset yourself and there's nothing inherently wrong. It's just, you know, some of the things that we're doing now are just throwing things out of whack, so you can fix it.
Exactly.
So
that the symptoms are more severe than the imbalance. You know what I mean? So you're having crazy breakouts and you're like, oh my gosh, this must mean that my hormones are so broken that I'm going to die or something. It's not the case. It's actually that it's such a fine balance that even if you're off by a little bit, you're going to notice symptoms, which is actually, you know, we should be grateful for, because it means that our bodies are showing us what's going on. That's a better way to think about it, right? Rather than, I think people are, we've all just become so stressed and scared.
So we have a lot to sort of talk about. Yeah, I wanted to move into some of the foods that you should be eating. But before I did that, could you just briefly talk about exercise and stress? What is this doing to our skin and our bodies?
Yes. So, okay. Should we start with the stress first, the bad one? So stress causes chronic inflammation. That's sort of the simplest level of it. In the same way that placebo or feeling good can make everything better inside your body, stress makes everything worse inside your body. And I know that it's a really, really difficult, you know, like I didn't, in the book, I didn't like go over the top about it, because I know that people, it's really hard to be like, so get less stressed. Good luck. Bye. Right. Like we have a lot going on. But the thing about stress is, similar to the hormone imbalance, it actually, any little thing you do to cope with stress actually makes a huge impact on how you're feeling. So, and how your body's reacting. So it's like, there's evidence that if you meditate one time for 20 minutes, your body is actually in a lower stress response right after. So this is really that simple. It really is all the like cheesy self-care things we hear about, like, take a warm bath, take some time for yourself, take a vacation. That stuff actually really, really works. Not to mention, even just your mentality about stress works. So now there's new evidence that if you can just look at your life and notice that you're, so we tend to walk around and be like, I'm so stressed out. That makes you more stressed out. So if you can look at your life and just kind of go, it's okay, everything's fine, I'm going to do things to take better care of myself, that actually makes an impact too. So this is very much an example of mind over matter.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, I'm glad that you, that's what I wanted listeners to get out of this, is that, you know, you can't be, well, it's super hard to just be like, I'm going to be less stressed generally, but just take away knowing that you can do small things that actually do make a really big difference, and stop telling people that you're stressed when they ask you.
Totally. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So funny, right? Just pretend you're not. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, you know, it's just like, how are you? Oh, I'm so busy, you know, or I'm so like, I'm stressed out. Like, it's just, the more you say it, the more it's true.
Absolutely. Right. I mean, you really can. I mean, this is why meditation, I think the biggest sort of perk of it is that what you're doing is you're mentally talking yourself out of, right? You're kind of removing all of this chatter that you have all day long that just makes you more anxious and more stressed. So it's a huge one. It's, you know, puffy skin, irritated skin. Like, it's something that you have to treat stress the same way that you would treat your diet or anything else you're doing to your body, because it is something that you're doing to your body, you know? And then the physical activity, the nice thing, exercise is the perfect thing to pair with stress, because exercise is actually a cure-all. It actually is the pill that everyone is looking for. And of course, it's not too good to be true, because it's insanely difficult to make yourself work out all the time. But it's exactly the same as as the meditation. You can do a very, very small amount of exercise and you will start making everything about your health better. And not more importantly, but very specifically with your skin, if you want to slow down aging, exercise is the number one way to do it. It is a very, very effective way of making your skin more firm, more elastic, stronger, tighter. That exercise is what does that. So I really sort of overpraise it in the book, and I'm doing that here. And it's about finding what you really like to do. So it's not, you know, I do think, and research shows, it's important to do sort of a combination of everything, but whatever gets you up and moving is what you should be making yourself, you know, or not making yourself, but hopefully charging forward, excited to get up and do something. That's what you should be doing.
Right, exactly. So, you know, don't feel like running is what you have to do if you hate running, like me.
Right.
Exactly. You know, like you can bike instead, or you can do like any form of movement is really good. And I loved that you said sitting is the new smoking.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Totally.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I think the reason that I sort of overemphasize exercise is because we're actually meant to be very, very active beings, and we're not anymore. We kind of sit down all day, every day. And so you're having to reverse something that's very unnatural for our bodies. And that means you have to get up and move around.
Yeah, it's a good reminder. Okay, so then if we were to move into some of the things, just briefly touch on some of the things that are really good. So we've touched on you need to cut out or reduce or eliminate soy, dairy, sugar, meat, especially factory farmed meat, and then processed foods.
Mm-hmm.
So once you've got a grasp on that, what do you move into that's particularly beneficial?
So number one is greens. Number one on everyone's list is greens, for very, very good reason. It is the most nutrients you can get for the least amount of food and money. That's amazing for all of us, right? All we want is kind of easier ways of feeding our bodies things that are good for us. And greens are exactly the way to do that. They fix virtually and reverse virtually every ailment that your body could be struggling with. And there are so many different options. So I think that's another thing, right? It's not a food in which we're saying, it's just this one thing, but rather green vegetables in general are really, really good for you. I make a point to say that, like, if lettuce is your favorite, eat lettuce. I don't know why lettuce gets so much hate, but it's really good for you too. So greens, all the way, super, like, just keep experimenting until you find the ones that you like, and you're going to get a lot out of it. Number two is fruit, which I know that people sort of tend to crinkle their noses at because we've become so scared about sugar, but fruit has a ton of vitamins and fiber. And so the reason that you do not need to be stressed about sugar and fruit, of course, this is obviously, again, a very personal thing. Some people have trouble with fruit while other people don't. But if you don't have trouble with it, you shouldn't be scared of eating it. You should actually be kind of running towards it because it's a very, very high content of vitamins that are especially good for the skin. And the fiber is what helps you break down the sugar in it so that it's not like you're just eating, you know, plain straight sugar. And they help you produce collagen, they repair tissue, they help fight sun damage. So there's a ton of benefits, and I just feel like people are not, we've just gone through sort of a bad, an anti-fruit craze. And then next is fat, which we talked a little bit about, but healthy fat in general, this is where you get a lot of, fat is necessary to help you process a ton of fat soluble vitamins. And so when you're not getting enough fat, you are also not getting enough of the vitamins that your body will not break down without it. So this is super important because it means that vitamins A, vitamin D, vitamin E, your body will just not break them down if you're not eating enough fat, and then you become deficient. So I think that's a really good way to think about it that people generally have sort of forgotten about. but also essential fatty acids like omega-3 and omega-6 that people have sort of heard, started to hear more and more about, are really, really important to create for creating healthy cells, especially healthy skin cells, and you can only get them through your diet. So if you're not eating fat in your diet, you're not getting essential fatty acids. And then fermented foods I put in there. I think that a lot of people have started thinking about this too, right? Yogurt and mostly yogurt. I feel like most people are thinking about yogurt, which is great. It's a great place to start. It does have a lot of sugar in it usually, but it's still like you're on the right track, and a lot of people feel really great when they're eating a little bit of yogurt every day. But bacteria in your gut is super, super important for your body to process things better. I would actually argue that a lot of the problems that we're going through, both internally and on our skin, has to do with our gut bacteria not being in balance. And then I sort of have this catch-all category of spices, which is just kind of the sort of foods that we think of as like garlic, ginger, turmeric, cinnamon, thyme. They all, same thing, have a super, super high content of vitamins and minerals, and they, all of them across the board, fight inflammation in the body. So, I call it sort of cooking dirty. So putting a lot of spices into your food is really good for you in general. And I think it's something that sort of gets overlooked.
Okay, those are really awesome tips and reminders. So when you say healthy fats, you're talking about like coconut oil, avocado, olive oil, things like that.
Totally, yes. I did put organic butter in there too. I think a lot of people actually do pretty well with organic butter. But again, that one, you know, I know that falls under sort of a subjective, like, see how you feel category. But yes.
Yeah, and the fermented foods is really important too, like you said. And I think too many of us focus on yogurt. And like you said, the problem with that is it's dairy, and it's highly, you know, there's lots of sugar and additives and different things like that. I'm reminded of a little while ago on the website, we ran a feature from Lacey of Free and Native on beet kvass, which is making like essentially a beauty tonic and also a blood purifier and alkalinizer out of fermenting beets. Like you just fill it up with water and
cool.
It's really, so there are so many other ways, and so I would encourage listeners to sort of dig into that a little bit and explore things beyond the probiotic yogurt.
Yes, and sauerkraut that you make on your counter is like the easiest thing to do ever. It seems really intimidating at first, but it's so easy. You make so much of it, and it's delicious. It's really yum.
Yes, it is really yum. Absolutely. Okay, so we've talked about so much, but just before I move into the sort of the beauty skin part, which is probably what everyone's dying to get to, I just wanted to talk about water too.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, so that's so key. And I feel like, you know, no matter how much, well, the majority of people are probably not drinking enough water. So what happens to your skin when you're dehydrated, and how much water do you think the average person needs to be drinking?
I mean, exactly what you would imagine from being dehydrated is correct, right? So when you imagine what it would feel like to like be in the desert with no water, that's what you're doing to your skin when you are not drinking enough water. So dry skin, chapped lips, you're actually more prone to being really irritated and red and itchy for that reason. You're just not giving your skin the hydration it needs internally, and you're making a lot of, like a lot of the products you're putting on your skin, you're kind of working against them because you're not hydrated enough. So as far as the question of how much to drink, I kind of say in the book that I think the answer is just more, more than you're drinking now, because I think people really get caught up in how much should I drink? Is there such a thing as too much? And you know, all that sort of debate. And it's just not like that with water. You know, almost everyone that I work with thinks they're drinking a lot. And then when they actually have to keep track of it, they realize they're not doing as well as they would like. So I tend to focus on like tips to make yourself drink more, like carrying it physically around with you, and just making sure that you're sort of thinking about it constantly, sipping on it, not feeling like you have to chug it down, but rather that you're hydrating yourself throughout the day. So Yeah, so it's very simply just more than you're drinking, because it's the easiest, fastest way to make everything better. I mean, you know, if you're feeling bad and you drink a glass of water, you will feel better and still feel your skin.
Yeah, for sure. I've always been told, you know, if your urine is clear and copious, you're hydrated.
Yes.
And another strategy that I found works really well, sorry, excuse me, is to have a clear, like a fairly large, at least 1 liter. And if it's only 1 liter, then maybe have two or fill it back up. But if it's clear and you have it on your desk and you have use a marker to put down markers so that by like 10 a.m. I should be here, by 12 I should be here, by 2 I should be here. And sort of it gives you like, it almost gamifies it. It gives you this challenge, just like, okay, this is, you know, it's a reminder and an actual visual reminder of how much water to drink. It works really well.
Oh my gosh, totally. Or yeah, we had a girl that works on our team. She was saying that what she's been doing is forcing herself to drink like a liter before she has her cup of coffee, and then the coffee feels like a reward. All of that stuff, like people shouldn't feel bad about playing tricks on themselves. Like whatever it takes, or not even tricks, you know, like rewards or ways or goals or ways of looking at it as a challenge, I think, is a really great way of making yourself do it. Whatever it takes, just do it.
Yeah, exactly. Or herbal teas or different things like that. Right. Organic ones, of course. Okay. So all right, so let's dig into the skin care. And, you know, I know we've talked about it a lot, but I do think that for people to get the results that they're expecting out of anything, you need to do the legwork. And the legwork is to take care of your insides first. And then you can move through to your actual topical, like what you're doing on the outside of your body, which is how you set up your book. And so I wanted to follow the same format. So let's talk about the idea of a skin cleanse and what that means, and sort of what is wrong with some of the products that you get on the shelf. I mean, we did talk about this with Tara in our last interview, so listeners are sort of primed for some of this, but I was hoping we could just dig into it in a bit more detail.
Great, I love it. So you're exactly right. You have to do all the stuff. Or not that you have to do anything before you get to the real skin cleanse, but that you at least need to be thinking about everything, right? Because even a skin cleanse is just, I think, a better way of dealing with your symptoms, but it is still just a way that you are dealing with your symptoms. You're not actually reversing whatever you're doing internally. So I'm really glad that you said that, because I think that's really important. But the sort of real guts of the idea of the skin cleanse is an actual break from your personal care products. And this, the number one reason for me that this is what where I came to, and this is the book that I wanted to write, is that's what ended up healing everything going on with my skin. So I had made improvements, and that's why there's so much in the book about diet and lifestyle and all the other factors. I had made tremendous improvements. I had not at that point solved my itchiness, solved my rash, made my scalp better, made my breakouts better. All of that was still happening. It was just quieted. The real tipping point for me, the point at which everything got better, was when I stopped using everything. And not to mention, I was already using natural products. So I think it's really, really important for people to start thinking about what they're putting on their skin, and to realize that natural or not, whether or not you are living a green beauty lifestyle, you are bombarding your skin with so many different ingredients, and you have to think of it in the same way that you think about your food. If you have learned, hopefully, that eating a more simple diet feels better, this is the case for your skin too. So to eat a simple diet, but then to wake up every day and use 12 different products with 20 ingredients in each of them is just extremely contradictory, whether or not you're, you know, like I said, living the most natural products routine ever of all time. It's still just too much for your skin. So the real, like I said, guts of this book is telling people, you need a break from that stuff too. You have to be able to give your skin a break to work its own magic.
Okay, so walk us through how that works.
So we talked about the product journal. I feel like that's a really good place to start, especially if maybe you're not doing a food journal right now, or you've done it in the past, or even if you want to just combine it with the food journal. I think it's the number one way to just really look honestly at what you're doing. So that's number one. You look at this list. This is what happens for people. You look at the list and you're like, okay, Adina, I hear you. I'm going to take a break. Wonderful. The second step is I tell people to think about their makeup. So I think makeup is kind of both the easiest and the hardest place to start. It's easiest because kind of I think most people tend to like hear that they need to think about their makeup and you automatically kind of start nodding. Like you're like, oh yeah, I know that I'm using stuff that's a little bit intense. But it's also really hard because I think we've reached the point where we rely on makeup just as much as we do on our other products. So what I say is at least look at the makeup products that you're using. Are you using stuff that's expired? That's not great for your skin. Are you using products that maybe like it could be as simple as your foundation is making you break out and it's time to switch to something new? And then the final sort of level to this is, are you taking it off? Are you going to bed with your makeup on every night? And do you realize that that could be the entire problem? So that's sort of the next stop, is just focus on taking a break from your makeup, or at least making sure you are very careful, very carefully and wholesomely, right? So like with a really, really nice makeup remover, I recommend using a bunch of different oils in the book, taking off your makeup. And then the next step is the actual skin cleanse. So this is, I offer three different levels in it. So this is a break from your products, whether it's 3 days where you are parting with some of your products. Maybe you're just not wearing makeup for 3 days, but you're keeping your other products, or maybe you're like rotating your products in a little bit more, sort of like one at a time rather than everything each day. Just a very, very gentle version of it. Level two is 1 day where you try to go completely product free. So no personal care products whatsoever, which is a little bit scary for people, but tends to work after you've done the first level. And then the last level is a more hardcore, like 3 days, from 3 days up to 2 weeks of going completely product free and actually relying a lot on water. So in the second level, I actually tell people that if you want to like make DIY products, if you want to use, if there's one product that you feel like you just can't live without and you want to keep it in, that's totally fine. But in level three, which is the version that's my sort of the epitome of where I think, you know, I want people to end up if they're doing this, you're going completely cold turkey and not using anything, and you think you're going to die, but everything gets better.
So it sounds like then the point of this is to give your skin a break. But I think that the deeper thing that people are walking away from after doing this is a realization that they don't need all this stuff. And to figure out that what's in your skincare is hurting your skin. And, you know, like makeup in particular. Well, no, not makeup in particular, but I think that it's one area where people turn a blind eye, like you said, and they just buy it from the drugstore because it's expensive or otherwise. So, you know, but like we talked about in my last interview with Tara, there's so much in there that is making you sick. So it's an important piece to look at for sure. So then, you know, your brand of skincare, SW Basics, I was really struck by, and I love that right on the label you put there are only three ingredients.
Yeah,
and that's fantastic because people are like, you know, you read the labels, you think, oh, it's got this extract, and that, even though it's all natural and organic, there's just so much in there, and you think each one of those has a benefit for your skin, but the reality is you don't need it all, like you're talking about. You just need to scale it way, way back. So you figured that out, obviously. And so once people have gone through this, what can they expect, or how should they move forward and change their habits so that their skin can benefit long term?
Yes. So really good question. I think in my dream world, it's something that people can come back to always, right? So you can kind of do it. You can go back to your normal routine, and you feel like you can come back to it. I think if if all goes well, it will kind of permanently shift your routine. If even just in the sense that you've realized a lot of your beloved, you know, a few of your beloved products don't quite work for you the way that you thought, and then actually maybe other products that you had in your routine before you love even more now, right? Oh my gosh, I didn't even notice, but this makes me glow even more than I thought, and I love it, and I'm going to stick to it. I think also it's kind of a, it encourages you to refresh, right? So to kind of look at everything and start over is really nice. if even that just you're kind of like tossing old things, and I think variety for your skin is actually just as good as variety for your diet. But I think more than anything, it's just about the discovery. It's just about looking really at your routine the way that you would at your diet, giving your skin a little breather, feeling like you can give your skin a little breather whenever you feel the need to do it again. But of course, it would be lovely if, like, if when you're done, you found a DIY recipe you really like that you're going to keep doing, or you found a way to kind of take a product and mix it with one ingredient and make it even better for you, and so that way you're cutting out another ingredient. It's very, very personal, but I think, meaning a lot of people come away from it and have different ways that they move forward from it. But I think in the experience itself, everyone kind of goes through the same thing where they're like, wow, my skin really got better. I feel much better. I feel much more in control. And it's sort of this almost this like lightness that you feel both emotionally and when you look at your skin.
Okay. That's awesome. And so you talk about, you're very actually transparent about that, even with your skincare brand, that you, there are ingredients in your kitchen that can really, are really beneficial and can do a lot of good stuff for your skin. You have them already. So what are some of those key ingredients that you can get out of your kitchen that are really good for your skin?
Yes. So this was my whole, sort of my epiphany came from, you know, my upside down showers led me to taking a break from everything. I was like, I can't do this anymore. It's too much. Sort of hit a limit. And I, from having studied nutrition, I turned to my kitchen cabinets thinking, well, if I know that a bunch of these ingredients are really good for me internally, they must also be good for my skin. Of course, that led to a whole lot of research, and it turned out I was right. But at the beginning, I really was just like, I'm going to reach for this ingredient and see what happens. And it's amazing. I mean, I wouldn't be where I am now. The line wouldn't be where it is now because we use a lot of the ingredients that I refer to in the products. So olive oil, almonds, ground oats, so like oat flour, honey. Honey is like an amazing ingredient. All of these, every time I talk about them, I'm just like, they're just so amazing. aloe vera. I have an aloe plant in my house, actually, that I regularly go cut pieces from to use because it's amazing. Coconut oil, which is, you know, very much experiencing its PR moment, but they're all as amazing as coconut oil. Apple cider vinegar, sea salts. Those are kind of like, those are just a few that I think are super recognizable and actually insanely versatile. So you can mix and match them. You can put them together to create a moisturizer. You can put a couple together to make a face wash. But what's really, really beautiful about them is you can use them completely on their own. So olive oil is a great example. You can take olive oil and moisturize your entire body with it. You can actually also use it as a face wash. So you can rub your face with it and then rinse clean, and you've actually cleaned your skin. So a lot of these are amazing because they're antibacterial, they're anti-inflammatory, they're full of nutrients, right? We tend to know why they're good for us internally. They do exactly the same things topically as they do internally.
So what are some of the, well, I personally, actually, I love using a lot of those things. Like coconut oil is my go-to moisturizer for my whole body. I find that honey, if you warm it and put it on your face as a mask,
it's amazing,
it's
right?
Like, oh, you've never had skin so soft.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
It's
and
so
then
luxurious
the rest-
too. That's the other thing. I think a lot of people tend to think that luxury only comes from a product, but there are actually a lot of cabinet ingredients. Like whenever I use honey, I feel like I'm like at the spa, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just so, yeah. And if it runs into your mouth a little, that's okay. It's awesome.
Right.
Yeah.
First your lips.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm curious to know then, what is your beauty routine like now after all these years, all this experimentation, the development of your brand, which actually I'm curious about as well, and to back up a step. Since, you know, knowing that a lot of these ingredients are just available in your kitchen, why did you feel compelled to create a brand and be so transparent about the fact that you're only using these three ingredients?
That's a really good question. So I actually, part of my story that we didn't talk about is I was teaching DIY workshops. So when I started out, I would just go to people and I'd be like, I came up with this three ingredient cleanser. It's so amazing. It's so easy. You can make it at home. And across the board received feedback that no one was interested in making it at home. So I learned really, really quickly that DIY, as much as I think it doesn't need to be a lifestyle, I do think people are working so hard these days to live a healthy life and choosing what they need to prioritize. So, for example, your family and raising your family, and then your job, and then after that, maybe cooking, right? So to mm-hmm. add this extra layer of, well, I also think you should be making your products, I think is just too much for people. And ultimately what I decided was that doesn't mean that when you go to the store, you shouldn't be able to find something that's as good for you as if you had made it at home. And I think that that's become really normal for food, right? Just because you're not baking your own bread does not mean you can't go get a really beautiful loaf of bread from the farmer's market or even the grocery store. But with skincare, nothing is like a DIY recipe on the market. Nothing is as simple as I thought it should be. And I spent a ton of time researching. I really, really did my work to see if this was the case, and it just wasn't. And so I felt like, you know, why not offer this to people? This is something that I would want. I want to be able to go to the store and buy something that's that simple. So I'm going to make it and sell it.
Now, so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's very true. It's very, very true. And it's hard to start doing something like that. And you just not mostly, but a lot of the times it's just a mindset. You feel like if you feel that you don't have time, you won't have time. You won't make the time. So I'm really happy that you decided to do this. And I think it's super admirable that you stripped it back to such a degree and you advertise that it's so simple because that's all that it needs to be. It's fantastic. So awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, and it's really grown too. That's awesome. Like, it's so incredible. Your product is sold far and wide. It's fantastic.
Yeah, thanks. It's been wild.
Yeah. So then back to your own beauty routine. Yes. What does it look like?
So it's pretty scary to most people, I think. I use water to wash my face twice a day. I do not use any soap. I also do not use any soap in the shower. Everyone always asks that. I wash with water. I use a natural shampoo and a natural conditioner. I use our products, you know, not every day, probably off and on. If I'm feeling dry, I'll use a moisturizer. If I'm feeling, if I had like a really, really good workout, that's when I tend to like exfoliate. If I'm feeling super sassy and having like the day where I'm home and taking care of myself on the weekend, that's when I tend to do masks. And then I have a couple of other sort of natural products around the house that I'll randomly be like, oh, I just remembered that serum I have that I love. I'm going to use that. But it's a very, very, very simple pared back routine. I only wear makeup when I feel like I'm going to a meeting or somewhere important. But you know, I understand that I'm a little bit lucky and a little bit, I have a little bit of an attitude problem where I'm just like, this is what I want to do, so this is what my routine is going to be. And it took me a really, really long time to get here. So, but I mean, the truth is my skin's been the best it's ever been from doing the least I've ever done. So I stand by it. Proudly stand by it.
And so you should. I don't know why you say you have an attitude problem. You're just passionate about it. And I love that. It's great.
And like, I'm like, don't wear makeup. But like, I understand people want to wear makeup. That's totally fine. I just wish we hadn't, you know, I think we've become really, really addicted to, and in like not a fun way, right? In like a kind of scared, in a fearful way where we use everything that we use. And I'd rather people feel really good about it. Beauty should be really like fun, not, you know, not something that we, not a crutch, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, for sure. I mean, it's that whole idea. You do talk about it a bit, but the idea of skin shame, you know, that it just, you feel, you literally judge people first off by their appearance.
Totally.
It's just, that's kind of hardwired into you as well, you know, as part of your, you know, mating instinct, just to judge people based on how attractive they are to you. And so you sort of take that and you really internalize it. And that internalization is what is so hard to shed and get rid of. But I think that honestly, though, I do think that if readers and listeners were to go through your program, if they were going to start from the inside, work their way out, I mean, this can, like you said, it takes a really long time. I think that's really important to strip back your expectation and realize that this is probably not going to happen in 30 days or less.
Right.
So start from the inside out and then do the skin cleanse, all that stuff, and then use the makeup maybe last. And maybe by that time, you won't be dealing with the crappy skin that you might have had 6 months ago. You'll be dealing with something completely new and different, which might change your outlook on makeup.
Right. Totally. Exactly. I mean, And I think the point of, like, being patient with yourself, and not just that, but, like, really proud of yourself for every step you take, is really, really important.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course it is. Yeah, that's the key to success. So at this point, really direct listeners to go pick up your book, because there's so much information. Everything we talked about, there's just that times like 10. Especially in this part, you know, this discussion about your beauty routine, about what the products are that you in your kitchen that you could be using, how to use them, all of that stuff. There's a lot of great information that's sort of hard to talk about in an auditory format. But, there's a whole section on recipes. There's lots of really awesome information in there. But I wondered if you could just sort of share one super simple recipe that you really love.
Oh, my gosh. Totally. So I feel like a really good one to share, particularly with everything we talked about, would be the makeup remover, actually.
Okay.
Because two reasons. First of all, it's such an easy place to start. And we talked so much about that, right? Like, look at your makeup, look at what you're doing. And secondly, it's actually a product that I really, really wish we could sell at SW Basics, and we can't, because it, spoils over time. Like, it's not actually very shelf stable, but it's an amazing, amazing, beautiful product that feels so good on your skin and, is insanely simple. So it's 2 tablespoons of sweet almond oil, which is really easy to find at a health food store. It's antibacterial. It's really close to the consistency of your skin sebum, so it soaks in really easily. But of course, you can replace this with olive oil or coconut oil. And then 1 tablespoon of aloe. And the aloe can come in any form. Obviously, I prefer some kind of aloe that's the closest to its natural state and doesn't have any added ingredients to it. But you can peel some of the leaf, some of the inside of the leaf, or you can buy aloe juice or aloe gel. And you mix it together with the oil, and you can apply it to remove your makeup. It feels so good. It's nice and cooling. It's moisturizing. And then actually, when you're done, after you've removed all the amount that takes your makeup off, you can reapply it as a really, really nice healing moisturizer. And it's just awesome. I can't even gush about it enough. I love it so much.
Wow. Okay. Oh, I'm so trying that. I have an aloe plant that I do not know what's going on with that thing. It looks more like Medusa than aloe plant. So basically what I'm saying is that it can afford to sacrifice a leaf or two. So I'm going to try that out.
If only we start kind of aloe exchange, where we give leaves to people, because ours has sprouted like 2 new plants. I'm like, what are we going to do?
Yeah, I think that's what's happened to mine. I'm looking at it right now. I think it's just like there's actually 10 plants in there. It must be. I've heard that there are male and female versions of aloe plants. I think I definitely have a female. But anyway, so once you put this on, do you rinse with water after you've used it, or no?
I would, to make sure you get your makeup off, I would either, the water's not really going to cut the oil, so I would actually either wipe it away with cotton or a washcloth. Or you can actually combine a little bit of if you use like a foaming face wash, you can do that to get all of your sudsy wash to it to make sure you get it all off. And then you would add the second layer that you kind of left on to moisturize your skin.
Okay. Awesome. So 1 tablespoon of each, you said, right?
2 of the oil and then 1 of the aloe, but you could do, you could do 1 and 1, and it would be awesome too.
Okay. And you said that it goes, it doesn't have a super stable shelf life. So how long would this last? Or is that like a one application kind of thing? That
recipe? It'll last a little. No, it'll probably last you about a week or so. I would put it. Yeah, this stuff's tough. I mean, I don't like my stuff to be cold, so I still put it in the cabinet. I would say if you put it in the cabinet, maybe 2-3 weeks at the most, you're going to want to toss it. And if you put it in the fridge, it might last you a little, might get you another week. But always err on the side of just, like, make a really small amount, use it up, and then, because, you know, you can always go back to the ingredients and mix a fresh batch.
I'm guessing it goes kind of cloudy or it smells a bit funny when it's bad.
Yeah, you'll be able to tell. So instead, like, you know, coat your body with it, put it in your hair.
Yeah.
Really indulge.
Okay. Awesome. Okay, well, Adina, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed our talk. There's so much information. I'm feeling like listeners are going to come away feeling a little overwhelmed. So again, if they just go pick up your book and then take their time.
Yeah. And we're here for them. Yeah. Just come talk to us.
Okay. I guess they can reach out to you on Twitter. What's your preferred sort of social media?
I mean, all of them, you know, we're all everywhere these days.
Exactly.
Yes. I mean, I'm sure that they'll be reaching out to you too. So we're all here for them.
All right. Well, thank you again. Was there anything you wanted to add just before we go?
Thank you. No, this was so fun. The most comprehensive explanation of the book I've ever done. So.
Oh, wow. Excellent. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
So that concludes my talk with Adina. Are you suitably inspired to give her advice a try? I hope so. Let us know what you think, and if you decide to give it a shot, share your thoughts with us over on Facebook at facebook.com/puregreenmag. I warned you there was a lot going on in this episode, so as usual, we've compiled show notes and other resources to help you make the most of the episode over at puregreenmag.com/podcast/Adina. This podcast is created by Pure Green Magazine. Go to puregreenmag.com to keep up with the great content we're sharing there. And we've just released a brand new issue, so the time is perfect to subscribe and enjoy the magazine in print. The paper is wonderfully tactile, and the reading experience is thoughtfully considered and truly lovely. Thank you for listening to this week's show. I'm Celine McKay, and this is the Pure Green Podcast.